When I was 16 years old, and I've probably told this story already, but I'll tell something different as part of the story. All my stories have like six different ways I can tell them. When I was 16 years old, I went to a summer camp in Virginia in the Blue Ridge Mountains. I was the senior patrol leader at the time, so I was like the boss. I like being the boss. And we spent the week on a high adventure camping trip. We went rock climbing and whitewater rafting, whitewater canoeing, rappelling, we went caving. We just kind of kept doing high adventure stuff that kept 16-year-old me entertained for the week. Now, I'm from South Jersey. We don't have hills down there. It's pretty much flat as you can be. And so caving, crawling under the earth into a hill, into the side of a mountain is new for me. And I jumped at the chance to go caving. And so we had to put on full-length clothing because the cave mud will bleach your clothes. We had to put on miner's helmets and little lamps so we could see where we are going. And we crawled into this cave, into a cavern which was, okay, maybe not this big, but a little bit smaller than the size of our sanctuary. And we're sitting there, we're sitting in a half circle, literally in the cave mud, and our guide tells us to turn off our miner's lamps one by one. And then finally, we're only focused on our guide. His is the only light that is left on, and he turns his off, and we're plunged into pitch darkness. And I remember what my father used to say, you can only experience true darkness under earth or under the ocean. If you try to go into a room and black out the light, light still seeps up from underneath. But this true darkness, this encompassing darkness, was stressful. Our guide started telling us a story about miners' madness, where the miners who worked in pitch blackness would go crazy because there was something about being sitting in that darkness that made your mind wander, made your mind go crazy. And he keeps talking about this for about 5 minutes, and finally he goes, all right, usually when I tell that story, someone turns on their lamp because they're worried, but we just decided to sit there in darkness instead. As right before we were leaving, we started exploring the caves a little bit more, we came up to this hole that was called Toothpaste Hole. And pretty much what it was is you climbed around through a cave vent on the side, and you came to a hole in the wall that was about 3 feet wide. And there was cave mud all around, and you were pretty much like a tube of toothpaste being squozed as you went through this tiny little cavern. Your arms are stuck by your side, and you're trying to like wiggle your way through. It was claustrophobic, and I get claustrophobic in like elevators, let alone tiny places where I can't lift my arms up, that are wet, that the cave mud is gonna bleach my clothes and bleach my hair if I wait too long. And here I am trying to shimmy up this tiny little hole to be squozed out like a tube of toothpaste. This is all relevant. We'll come back to this in a minute. But I have to come back from my claustrophobia for a second. We're okay. So this week, we're continuing on in the story of Jonah. We've been studying Jonah. We were here last week. We're going to be here for a couple more weeks. To recap, if you remember from last week, Jonah was living in Gath-Helper. Now, if you are reading your bulletin insert, the back is a fancy little map I found on the internet, because the internet is a beautiful place where you can find everything you ever wanted and more. And the black and white isn't that great, but Gath-Helper is here on your map, a little bit north of Jerusalem. God talks to Jonah, and he says, I want you to go to Nineveh, which is here east of Gath-Helper. That's where the B is, and it actually says Nineveh, the great city. So God tells Jonah, go east, go to Nineveh and preach to them. And instead, Jonah goes south to Joppa to make his way to Tarshish, which is all the way on the other side of the map. And if you look, that's southern Spain. That's where the Rock of Gibraltar is. And if you can imagine what it was like in we don't really know what year this was, probably about the 9th or 10th century BC, they didn't know anything further than that. The edge of Spain was pretty much the end of civilization, the end of what we thought the world was. And so Jonah was trying to make his way on the boat to the end of the world. And so we talked last week about why Jonah was doing this. Nineveh was the head, it was the capital of Assyria. The enemies of Israel and the Hebrews, the people who kept trying to kill the Jews. And so God comes to Jonah, talks in his ear and says, I need you to go to them. They're sinful, they're evil, they're wicked and depraved. I need you to go and preach to them. And Jonah pretty much screams at God and says, no, I'm not going to go. There's no way I'm going there. I hate them. And we're going to see that next week and the following week when Jonah says to God, I hate them. Why are you sending me there, God? I don't want to go. I'm going to go to the end of the earth to get away from you. I'm going in the opposite direction of Nineveh so I don't have to go. So he runs from God. He falls asleep in the bottom of a boat. He's lulled into a false sense of security, and God sends a huge wave, a huge storm. The sailors wake him up. They pray to God. They throw Jonah over the boat. And the last verse in chapter 1 reads, the Lord provided a huge fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and 3 nights. So Jonah is swallowed into the giant fish, and we open up in chapter 2. And of all things for Jonah to do while he's in that fish, Jonah starts praying. He prays a prayer of lament. He prays a prayer that we probably could have read today as our Psalter reading, because it's pretty similar. He says, in my distress, I called to the Lord, and he answered me. From the depth of the realm of the dead, I called for help, and you listened to my cry. Jonah had thought he died. He was thrown overboard. He was drowning. And he calls out to God in his last breaths. He says, you hurled me into the depths, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. We know it was the sailors who threw Jonah into the water, but Jonah knew it was God's will. He knew he was running from God. He was running away from Nineveh, and the sailors throwing him over is what God intended. Jonah says, I said I have been banished from your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. I tried to run from you. I tried to hide from you. I tried to go to the end of the world. I'm not worthy to be called a Jew or a Hebrew. But in dying, I will see heaven. I will see your holy temple. In death, I will seek you out, Jonah says. The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath me barred me in forever. Now, this is the line that always freaks me out. Seaweed wrapped around my head. I'm from the shore. I know what that's like. Seaweed wrapped around my head. The depths surrounded me. To the roots of the mountain I went down. Jonah wasn't just drowning, he was dead. He was dead. The roots of the mountain to the very bottom of the ocean, the earth becomes like a tomb. Lost forever, Jonah thought. The earth barred me in forever like a prison. But you, Lord my God, brought my life up from the pit. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. God lifted him up. Jonah knows that this is from God. Jonah knows that God reached down and saved him. And so Jonah turns. Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. But I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say salvation comes from the Lord. The pagans, the Ninevites, the sailors who threw him overboard turn away from God. They turn away from God's love, and it's ironic because Jonah just did the same thing. He turned away from God and ran to the end of the world. And yet here Jonah says, but those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love. I will preach and share the news. I will say salvation comes from the Lord. He prays this, and God commands the fish to throw him up. Now this prayer, like I said, is like a psalm. Jonah was a Jew. He would have read the Psalms, he would have prayed the Psalms, he would have sang the Psalms. It has a structured format. He describes his situation. He describes what he thinks will happen, that he'll die. He changes because God saved him. And then he rejoices and promises God that he will continue on a proper life. He will continue on and preach the good news of God. And after this prayer, God forgives him. He hears him. He commands the fish to throw him up onto dry land, comically in the direction of Nineveh. On the road to Nineveh, because Jonah is now ready. Now, what I always find funny is the fish. Every time we talk about Jonah, you think of Jonah and the whale. Our bulletin cover last week was that it was a giant whale and Jonah's kind of standing in the middle of the whale. But the literal word in Hebrew means fish, or sea monster is a better translation of that Hebrew word. Maybe a shark or a dogfish. The image of Jonah and the whale brings a memory to me of Pinocchio, where Geppetto gets swallowed by the whale. And in the Disney version of the movie, he's actually sitting at a desk writing a letter inside of the whale. Plenty of room. But instead, for Jonah, he's swallowed by a fish, and we don't have a ton of information, but on the front of your bulletin is a Greek Orthodox icon of Jonah, and it did not come out well because it's in color and I printed black and white. But you can kind of make out the sea monster that Jonah's being swallowed by, and then awkwardly Jonah's holding a scroll, not really sure what the Greek Orthodox are working at, but this is what I envision when I think of the fish now. Barely bigger than Jonah, being swallowed and not sitting in a huge cavern, but being squished into that little toothpaste hole in the bottom of that cave in Virginia. The acids in the fish's stomach bleaching his skin, bleaching his hair, bleaching his clothes. The smell of rotting fish. Hell. He was probably slowly being dissolved in that fish. And yes, God sent the fish to Jonah, and at the end of chapter 1, we don't know why. Maybe just to further punish Jonah. Because he must have been sitting in the middle of this fish, scrunched up and imprisoned. Completely blacked out, no candle on top of a desk like Geppetto writing a letter. But sitting there thinking he was dying. Did my mic go out? I'm still there, okay. Sitting there thinking he was dying, sitting there, not sitting up, not standing up, not in a ball, with his arms by his side, in darkness. Smelling rotting fish, smelling the acid that is burning his skin, bleaching his hair. Scripture says Jonah was in the belly of the fish
for 3 days and for three nights. Doesn't say scared out of his mind. Doesn't say in a place that is a literal hell. Doesn't say in a place where he can't even move and he's so claustrophobic and hyperventilating. And in this place, in this disgusting place, Jonah prays. I wouldn't have prayed. I know exactly what I would have done in that situation. But instead, Jonah prays. He prays to the Lord and he says, Lord, I have been banished from your sight, but again I will look to your holy temple, in verse 4. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord. When I was drowning, you saved me. I would have preferred the water. When I was drowning and dying, you saved me. His salvation wasn't until later, where he was on dry land. The salvation that God had given him was to be swallowed by a fish, to sit in the acid of a fish next to rotting fish, bleaching his hair, claustrophobic in the darkness. And he prays to God from the belly of a fish, and he praises God. Oh, there we go, now I'm back on. He praises God. He says, God, you were faithful to me. God, you saved me. I will remember this day as long as I live, which, let's face it, in the belly of a fish was probably not that long. I will preach the good news. I will say salvation comes from the Lord until the day I die, while smelling the rotting fish in the belly, while being bleached by the stomach acids, while swimming to the depths of the ocean that he has no idea what is happening. He prays to God in the belly, from the belly of a fish, trapped, lost, confused. In 3 days it took the fish to swim back to the shore. 3 days until Jonah pulls up the courage to pray to God. 3 days until God listens to him. Until God tells the fish to throw him up on the land. Friends, we may never be stuck in the belly of a fish. It might feel like it. We might feel like we're stuck in that toothpaste hole in the bottom of a cave. We may feel like we're stuck in a situation that we can't get out of. And the good news is that we can still pray to God. Our prayers may never be that earnest, they may never be that important or life-saving as Jonah's was, but that doesn't mean they're any less important. It doesn't matter if you're in a fish in the bottom of the sea, in Virginia, in a cave, or at home praying before a meal. Your prayers are still important to God. It doesn't matter what your relationship is. If you come to church on Sunday and you're a little confused, that's not any Broadwayians here this morning. That's for my YouTube people. There's two of them, but it doesn't matter if you're confused about your faith. It doesn't matter if you're strong in your faith and you attend Bible study every week and you know your scripture. It doesn't matter if you have this lifelong commitment to God or just recently you found him again. Your prayers still matter. Whether you pray constantly, like 1 Thessalonians told us, or you pray only when your back is against the wall, whether you're living in Nineveh or going to preach to Nineveh, whether you're sitting in the belly of a fish or sitting here in a pew or sitting at home or sitting at a traffic light, your prayers are still important. God still hears your prayers. If he can hear Jonah in the belly of a fish in the bottom of the sea, he can hear you in Warren County. He can hear you as you go about your day because God can hear our prayers. God listens to our prayers. He knows us. And he'll answer us. Maybe not the way we're expecting. Maybe he'll throw us into a fish. Maybe he'll throw us into the sea. Maybe he'll make our situation throw us on the path to Nineveh. Maybe his answer is not yet, maybe in a little while, maybe tomorrow, maybe never. But God hears you and listens to you. We just have to trust him. We have to sit in the belly of the fish and say, God, you saved me from what was certain death to what is now eventual death. God, you love me. Salvation comes from you. Whether I know that or I feel that, or because my pastor says so, and I hope that's true, you can still pray. Amen?